I'm currently recording this episode on a dark and stormy night, the most cliched of literary settings. And all I can think of is that weather like this really makes me want to curl up with a good book. Hopefully you're doing that if your weather's anything like mine. And what I'm in the mood for right now is some deep, intricate, complicated fantasy, not a genre I usually gravitate towards. So my listeners, if you have any recommendations, please let me know. This is an area of reading I am woefully inept at. And please, please recommend something with at least one female character. Welcome to your favorite book. And today's guest is Marilla Michael. Marilla, how are you today?
I am doing great, despite it being super hot in Boston. But yeah, overall, it's been a good week and it's Friday, so can't complain.
It is Friday. I normally don't record on Fridays. It just never happens to work out that way. Usually people have got weekend plans, but it's like, it's 2021. What even are plans anymore? Like,
yeah, like I'm not doing anything. Like Rachel and I are going to go to Dave & Buster's after this. So, you know, it's a pretty low key night.
That's fun. Dave & Buster's is fun.
Yeah, for sure.
That's actually funny. You brought up exactly what I was going to bring up. So we met through former podcast guest and mutual friend, Rachel Allen. And so she was just like, you need to talk to my friend Marilla. She's got lots to say about books. And I'm like, more than happy to. And I'm so glad that you picked this book in particular. We are talking about The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, which is a book I have an interesting history with and sort of interesting opinion. So we'll talk about all that. But before we get to all of it, Marilla, can you tell us all a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I live in Boston and I actually just moved down here in November. So that was very interesting, moving during a pandemic. But I work as a researcher in gene therapy here. So I'm like a science oriented person. But yeah, Rachel and I met at Tufts. So I'm like familiar with the Boston area, but just moved down from Maine.
Nice. A fellow science-minded person. It's always nice to meet, you know, have the fun intersection between science and books. They go together pretty well.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And so, Marilla, I warned you about this ahead of time, but I am going to ask you a question that is unrelated to books. And if you could be any animal in the world, what would it be and why?
Oh, man. I have not thought about this in a long time, but I'm kind of vibing with penguins at the moment. They just seem like they're having a good time. They're just kind of waddling around. They get to like slide down ice caps. And I don't know, it just like, they seem like they're having fun, you know, until all the ice caps melt. But I guess for now we can have some fun in Antarctica.
Penguins are here for a good time, not a long time.
Exactly. And I feel very connected to that motto.
That question came to mind because when I was interviewing for grad school a few years back, one of the professors at one of the grad programs I was interviewing for asked me that question. It was after a series of like subject related, like high stress questions. And then she's like, if you could be any animal, what would you be? And that one stressed me out like way more than anything else.
Yeah, because it takes you completely off guard. Like I was interviewing for jobs and when people just like ask about my personality, I'm like, wait, what? I don't actually know who I am. I'm not prepared for that.
Right. And you wonder, like, is there like a right animal to say? I remember saying like meerkat just because I love meerkats. And then they're like, tell me why. And I'm like, oh, no.
Like, I don't know.
I just like them. Okay. And yeah, so I figured, you know, we'd start with the icebreaker question and things can only get easier from here.
Oh, for sure.
And so, Marilla, I'm interested in knowing, tell me a little bit about your relationship to books, you know, where you kind of started off reading and where you're at now, if anywhere.
Yeah, so I've definitely gone through ebbs and flows. I was a huge reader when I was a kid. And then I don't think I read a single book for pleasure in college. And then like the couple of years out of college, I started reading again. But honestly, now we're friends on Goodreads, I think. But mm-hmm. I set like a goal of like 20 books last year, I read zero. And then I set a goal of like 20 books for this year and have to be honest, rereading The Hobbit was the first book I read this year. So I'm like thinking of kind of getting back into it. Like I have so many books that I want to read, but I find it really hard to like focus and read a physical book. So I've been getting into audiobooks, but then I, you know, have so many podcasts that I like to listen to. So the like short answer, I guess, is that I've been very bad about reading, but I think this will be like the impetus for me getting back into it because there are so many good recommendations that I've been getting.
I'm really glad that you owned up to reading being kind of an off and on thing for you, because honestly, I think that's how it is for most of us. Like I literally majored in English in college and didn't read at all for fun. Like college is just that time where you just kind of lose that sense of reading for fun. There's so many other distractions and so many other things to do that you don't really think about books the same way. And I had to kind of rediscover reading after I wasn't doing it for homework. And yeah, like audiobooks have been super great for me too. And it really helped me get back. And audiobooks was honestly what got me into The Hobbit this second time around, which we're going to talk about. And I am happy that, you know, having you reread an old favorite kind of got you back into reading a little bit.
Yeah. And I definitely, both times I read it, this is only my second time reading it, have been the audiobook. And I feel like it's just such a good story to be told out loud. Like I can envision like all of the singing portions of it. If I'm just reading it physically, I'm like, I don't know what the tune is. I might just skip over this part. But when you have someone who's doing all of these different voices, it's just like so engaging. So I would totally recommend for people, if they're able to at least listen to the audiobook once.
100%, 100% agree for a lot of the same reasons. I remember when I first read this book, which we're going to talk about more, but I remember skipping over all the songs. I'm like, why are there so many songs here? Like, oh, look, I kind of treated it. You know, you probably remember this from like school. You know, when you had to read like a certain number of pages in a textbook?
Yeah.
And then you get to like a big picture and you're like, ooh, free page. And you just skip it over. Yep. That's how those songs felt.
Yeah. Cause it's just like, yeah, you don't know how it's supposed to go. And honestly, that's like another question that I was thinking about. I was like, how does the narrator know the tune of the songs? Like, did he just make it up? What did a musician come in and say, let's like do something like this? Because they're different than the movies, obviously, which came out later. And so I'm like, which one do I like more? And like, how did they come up with this?
Yeah, I wonder. Part of me was like, I don't know, did they unearth some sheet music? Like, did Tolkien write some music? And I'm like, I doubt it. They must have just come up with something. But the songs really seem to fit. Like, the tunes seem to fit the lyrics. So I have no idea. That's a good point. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, well, yeah, it worked. And yeah, again, the narrator is amazing. I love when they're like so into it. And like, definitely some books, you can just read it. You don't need someone to like grab you, but I can definitely see for people if they're just reading it physically, I can see how it's like a lot of telling and not showing and how it could get a little bit redundant. Like not for me, but I can definitely see how that could happen for people.
Right. I totally get that. And I agree with a little of that. Before we jump into some of these more specific comments, to give you all a little bit of background. So like I mentioned, The Hobbit by J.R.R. Tolkien, which was the prequel to his Lord of the Rings series, which he is most well known for. To give you all a little summary, as always on this show, we attempt to avoid spoilers whenever possible. We're probably going to have a section towards the end where we talk about the ending because I think it's worth discussing. I'll just include some timestamps for everyone if you want to avoid those spoilers. So I'll preface, you know, when we start talking about the ending. But to give everyone a little bit of a summary, so this is something I dashed up. Bilbo Baggins, a peaceful hobbit who wants nothing more than his armchair and a helping of second breakfast, is thrust into a journey that is not his own when Gandalf the Wizard volunteers his services to a troop of dwarves. The quest is to retrieve an ancestral treasure now guarded by the dragon Smaug. Along the way, Bilbo finds himself in battles of brawn, flight, and wit as he seeks to stay alive, retrieve the treasure, and prove to himself that he's meant for adventuring. And so it's a little bit of a background to this story. It's really a delightful premise, and there are a lot of really great elements of whimsy here, which we're going to talk about. But before we get to all that, Marilla, take me back in time. When did you first read this book, and what were your impressions?
So I've always been aware of The Hobbit. I was a Lord of the Rings fan before I was a Hobbit fan. Mm-hmm. And I actually started, I mean, people might call me a fake fan, but I started by watching the Lord of the Rings movies like almost every weekend for like the vast majority of high school. So I felt like I like really knew them inside and out, and I just like never got around to reading them. I don't know why. I just loved watching the movies. I thought they were fantastic. And so because I was a huge fan, I was obviously always aware of The Hobbit. Again, just didn't get around to reading it, especially during college. Didn't have a ton of time to read for pleasure, but I had to look back on my Goodreads, and I read The Hobbit for the first time almost exactly 3 years ago. Yeah, so like August of 2018, I read The Hobbit for the first time. And then a few months later, I went through the entire Lord of the Rings trilogy right after that.
So it's a fairly recent read for you in the grand scheme of things. It wasn't a book you picked up as a kid or had read to you. What do you think really grabbed you about The Hobbit at that time compared to the Lord of the Rings trilogy?
So I knew kind of from what people have told me and just kind of the lore that The Hobbit was more... not necessarily a children's book, but more geared towards like young adults and children, or something that you could read to your child without having all the heaviness of Lord of the Rings. Like the stakes are so high in Lodur, like it's the fate of the human race is at stake. And then in The Hobbit, it's just like, there's just a gang of dudes who are trying to, you know, get some treasure. And it's just way more fun and lighthearted, but there are still like really great moments of friendship. And Bilbo is a great character that we don't really get to see a lot of in Lord of the Rings. And you can tell from like those references that he's had such a fun history, but we never really get to see, or I didn't get to see that when I was, you know, watching and reading Lord of the Rings. So I think just like the lighthearted nature of The Hobbit and that kind of like storytelling a little bit lighthearted is what grabbed me initially.
And that makes sense because you get that nice mix of the lore, but also just a more laid back pace. And obviously there are still pretty high stakes here. It's a pretty dangerous journey they're going on. But like you said, it's nothing compared to Lord of the Rings where it's like, oh my God, it's the ultimate battle of good and evil. Like there are thousands and millions of people that, okay, confession, I've never read the Lord of the Rings. I've never seen all the movies. I saw the first one once and fell asleep.
That's
where I'm coming from with this.
I've definitely tried to get a few friends like into the movies, and they've been a little bit bored despite me like reciting all of it. They're kind of like, wow, they're just like still walking, and they're just still walking. And I'm like, no, but just wait, in 30 minutes something is gonna happen. And I also love, I haven't seen the extended versions of The Hobbit, but I've seen the extended versions of Lord of the Rings many times. And yeah, I don't know. I just like never got bored, even from like a first watch. And I think that seeing the movies beforehand, and that was the case with The Hobbit too, seeing the movies beforehand and then reading the books, it kind of gave me like a full idea of what was going to happen. I think maybe if I did it in the opposite direction, I might have been a little bit bored at first.
Interesting, because I mean, I do not hold this against the Lord of the Rings movies at all, because I just don't like movies in general. I'm just not a movie person. So it's like hard for me to sit through like any movie, let alone like a long movie. Like I always say, I'm Indian and I can't finish a Bollywood movie. Like it's just inherent to me. But I've been told by so many people that it's a fantastic movie franchise. And I definitely want to talk to you about the Hobbit movie, and we're going to get to that.
Oh boy.
But to bring in a little of my own history, so we were mentioning before this, Rachel and I, your friend Rachel, went to middle school with me, and we were assigned this book for summer reading. So we read this when we were about 12, seventh grade. I remember not liking it at all, thinking it was like dry and boring. And I was like, why are they singing? And back then I was very like anti-fantasy. I thought fantasy was for children, and look at me, I am 12, I'm too old for this. Like it was the same way with me and Narnia, like all these series that like everyone liked and I just couldn't get into. And then I also just had this feeling, maybe the movies, that like Tolkien books are for boys, and I don't believe that's the case. Although one thing is, there are no female characters in this entire book.
Yeah, that's a bad bad thing.
Not a one. I looked. I was like, we're not even getting like a female wolf or a female eagle. Like, there's nobody.
Yeah, and I think because they added that like elf character love interest in the movies, and at first I was like, who is this? I was like, why are you adding random characters? Then I realized I was like, yeah, there are no women at all in the entire book. And I kind of blame that on, you know, the time that it was written, but it would have been nice to have, at least in Lord of the Rings, you know, you have Arwen, and Eowyn as well. But still, those are like two women and like how many men?
Right. It's like 100 men and like a couple women, and every time they would show up. I remember the first movie, I'd see one and I'm like, is that just a long-haired elf or is that a woman? Yay, a woman! It's like, oh, that's just Legolas. Never mind.
Exactly. He's so pretty.
He is very pretty. I will give you that. And so coming back to this book a second time, I was kind of like, okay, how is this going to be? I dug up my old copy from the seventh grade. I found it in my parents' house and I was like, okay, let's try this out. And I started reading it on the page and it just wasn't working for me. And then I found the audiobook and I was like, this is how I feel like this story is meant to be consumed. Because you were exactly right. It has a very wonderful, like, oral storytelling quality to it. Like, there's so much whimsy to the actual narration. Like, not only the voice of the audiobook writer, who's this very stodgy British man, at least in the version I found, who does the voices very well, I will say. But the actual narration, the prose, there's so many of these lovely like asides being like, you know, dwarves are very friendly creatures if you get to know them, and like these little sort of things you can say from above looking in, and it makes it all feel like you're reminded that this is a lighthearted story, even if they've been starving in the woods for 4 days or something like that.
Yeah, and there are moments that I kind of forgot about listening to it a second time where the narrator will like talk to the reader and be like, well, you wouldn't understand this. You know, you're sitting at home on your couch, like comfortably listening to this. Or during the riddle portion, he would say something like, oh, well, you of course know the answer to this in like two blinks of an eye. And I'm like, I actually don't, but thank you for your faith in me.
I felt the same way, like during the riddle portion, which is probably my favorite part of the book.
Oh, same.
He was just saying like, oh, you've probably guessed the answer to this. And I'm like, no, like I'm a grown woman. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, yes, of course. Definitely a fish in the pants. Yeah, I totally get it. And I'm just, yeah. But yeah, that's definitely one of my favorite portions. I mean, Gollum is, I have like mixed emotions with Gollum, because at first you think, oh, you know, he has like such a bad spirit about him and he's just always trying to ruin people's plans, but then you feel bad for him. He's like so possessed and he only had like, he has nothing going for him except for this ring, and we see that like in this franchise as well as the Lord of the Rings franchise. And so you like, you feel kind of bad for him. I would say less so in The Hobbit than in like subsequent movies and books.
Right.
Definitely like a sense of like, you know, he's just like this creature who has just been like torn down, who like used to be someone like a normal person. But that's also bringing a lot of information like from the backstory that we learn about in Lord of the Rings.
Right. And that was, Gollum was one of those characters, like, from what I knew of Lord of the Rings, like he was the character I was the most familiar with, him and Gandalf. Mm-hmm. And just I knew the Gollum voice. I knew the Gollum look from the movie. And I was like, okay, yeah, the voice was perfect in the audiobook. That's exactly how I remembered. And you do learn about his backstory and how the ring has corrupted him in some way. Like, that's just integral to his character. And you do feel for him. And even if you don't know that part, you can empathize. He lives alone in this mountain. Like, there's literally no one for him to interact with. Like, just lives in the dark and he's this monstrous creature. And I mean, I find it hard not to feel bad for a character like that, even though he is a monstrous character.
Yeah. And then he loses like the one thing that is kind of like keeping him together. And like, it needs to happen for like so many events that happen later on in the book, but it's just, I think, feel like we kind of just like leave Gollum and we like don't think about him again. And it's just kind of like a blip, when in reality that like sets off a lot of like subsequent issues for like Bilbo and Frodo later on.
Right. And speaking of that, you know, the way we kind of leave Gollum and move on, like, I was really surprised on like reread, re-listen, that this is a very episodic kind of book. Like, it's this one long quest to find this treasure, but it's really just a series of these smaller quests and smaller adventures. Like, you can imagine like reading this to your kid and getting through, you know, chapter one and then be like, okay, time to go to bed, and tomorrow we'll read chapter two. It's got that quality to it, and it keeps you engaged. It really does, these mini quests.
It does. They kind of, for me, like, it doesn't get redundant, even though like these little mini quests kind of follow a similar formula. It's like, they get in trouble, Bilbo saves them. They get in trouble, Gandalf saves them. Like, mm-hmm. Gandalf leaves, they get in trouble, Gandalf mysteriously comes back and saves them. It still keeps you engaged. And I think on the first read, I was kind of surprised that I felt so engaged, because I feel like the actual characters of the individual dwarves are not, besides maybe Thorin, are not really fleshed out. Like, you kind of mm-hmm. have an idea of some of them, like they all have their own little side comments, but it's not really like, oh, Feely has this kind of personality. They're just kind of like, the dwarves as a pack are kind of like a boisterous, funny, sometimes grumpy crowd. And I thought that maybe that would bother me more. But when you get to the point of having like 13 dwarves, you really, and a short book, you can't flesh all of them out, obviously. So I'm glad at least like Thorin is a little bit like more fleshed out. But I think in the movies, since they had so much time splitting it up three really long movies, you get a better sense of each individual dwarf's personality, which is like one of the few nice things I can say about the movies.
I'm glad you brought that up. We'll table that a little bit. The little I have seen of the Hobbit movies, whew, we've got a lot to discuss. But I find it really interesting. You mentioned sort of the characters, and to me, this is kind of where I was a little drawn out of the book a little bit. And it was thinking, like, you know, what wasn't working for me? And actually, I didn't really have a phrase for it until I mentioned it to a friend. Shout out Ariel, if you're listening to this. I was mentioned I was reading this book, and she said, you know, I liked Lord of the Rings. It took me forever to get through The Hobbit. And she said sort of a broad statement that I couldn't quite grasp until I was done with the book. And she's like, Tolkien doesn't really write characters. He builds worlds. Mm-hmm. And I was like, you know what? That's kind of right. Because even Bilbo, who we spend the most time with, we see things sometimes in his perspective. How well do we really know Bilbo? We don't. We're given these indications that, like, he has these skills, but we don't have time to talk about it. Or we don't know who he was before this all started. Like, this book starts, like, immediately all the dwarves start coming in. It's like time for the quest. Mm-hmm. We really have very little indication of who Bilbo is, other than he likes his hobbit hole and his mom's side of the family is a little more adventurous. And that's all we know about this man. We learn a little bit more about him as we go. But even still, I was like, for the protagonist of this book and the main guy we're following, there's like very little character interiority. And I know that's not really Tolkien's focus here, but I think that's what prevented me from like really loving this book.
Yeah, definitely. I can see that. And when I think about The Hobbit, it's kind of one of the first like really mass scale, like fantasy worlds. And you know, we learn a lot. We have that whole section in the very beginning, just about hobbits in general, like, hobbits love to eat. They love, you know, to have nice, comfy houses. And I'm like, yeah, me too. I can totally relate to that. But you're right. Like, we don't really learn a lot about any of the main characters. We just see how they act. And you can kind of glean personality traits from that. I mean, we know that Bilbo doesn't like adventure, but he really just needs like a small push out the door. And then he's like, you know, on this grand adventure. And I think that if the world wasn't so detailed and so, like, it just comes off as, like, very magical to me. And that might be, like, my biases having seen the movie. So I can't really come in with it thinking how would I have felt if I just read the book and not seen the movies and like physically seen like Rivendell, for example, which is like such a stunning, stunning setting. But I think like for this purpose, for like this like fantasy and a lot of people's like introduction into fantasy, like if you're looking for like a classic fantasy novel, the building of the world kind of takes precedent and you can kind of make up personality, you know, traits based off of that. You know, we can all have our own versions of Bilbo that are like a little bit different, you know?
Yeah. Although the one thing I will say for the Hobbit movies, since we're sort of veering in that direction, is Martin Freeman to me made a perfect Bilbo. Like I could not picture, like once I saw his face, I was like, there's Bilbo. There he is.
I agree. I agree.
And that's probably the one positive I have.
Yeah. I don't know if you watch Sherlock, the BBC show.
Yep. Yep.
So at first I thought I cannot like separate these two. It's going to be like too confusing, right? Like I have to separate them. It's like too confusing to have the same actor. But the way that he acts is just so, it really matched, I felt, the actor who played like the older Bilbo in the Lord of the Rings movie. So I just like, even like, not even from a, just a look standpoint, but I think from like the acting standpoint, that kind of like, towards the end, a little bit more jovial and lighthearted, but at the beginning, very like stuck in his ways almost and like uncomfortable with kind of the very fiery energy of the dwarves and the almost like comical nature of Gandalf, who I forgot how often he just like leaves for extended periods of time. And he's just like, I have an errand to run. So are you guys good? I'll just be back like when you are in desperate need of me. And maybe not even then.
Yeah. Oh my God. I found myself reading this and I was so confused about two aspects of Gandalf. The first being how he just kind of fucks off randomly for portions of this book. And he's like, I've got a thing to do. And then it's like, we never learn what the thing is. I haven't read Lord of the Rings, so I don't know if it has anything to do with Lord of the Rings, but he has like a thing to do. And the other part about Gandalf I don't get is like what his powers actually are. Because when you think about a wizard and sometimes he just kind of gets them out of stuff, he feels like the definition of like a deus ex machina. Like that's just what he is.
Yeah, I think especially you see that in The Hobbit because they don't really like flesh out what he can do. Obviously, like there are times where like he has his staff and he can just like destroy things. And there are other times where he can call the eagles somehow. Nobody knows how, but it's like Gandalf knows how to call the eagles and he's going to come save us. But yeah, it's just kind of like, it's the kind of thing where you can just imagine you can imagine Gandalf as like whatever type of wizard you want. Like, especially if you haven't seen the movies, if you're reading this for a first time and you're like listening to it, especially, or even better, like someone is reading it like in person aloud to you, it kind of gives you space to build your own world like a little bit in terms of the characters.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that was intentional, but I think that's like kind of the flip side to maybe thinking that the characters aren't fleshed out enough. It kind of gives you like a little bit of freedom. But yeah, who knows what Gandalf can do? Like anything, but also nothing.
Yeah, because like I was just so puzzled because sometimes it's like they're starving and it's like, maybe a wizard could find food. But then it's like, no, they can't. And then he's like knows all these magical creatures, but like not that well. So I just like wanted to know more about Gandalf, even more than I wanted to know about Bilbo. And it's like, I want to know who some of these characters are. I agree, you can't really get into all 13 dwarves. I don't even remember all their names off the top of my head, and I just finished this book.
Yeah, I always remember Thorin, Feely, and Keely. And then the other ones, I'm like, I might be making up these and just like, because a lot of them sound the same. There's like Balin and Dwalin, and like Beaufort and Bomber.
Yep.
And then I lose it.
Ori, Dory, and Nori.
Yeah.
Oink, I was thinking, they're all coming back to me now.
Yeah. I was thinking like, oh, maybe I should like learn a song to remember this in case Malavika asked me to name all of them. But, you know, did not have the time to do that.
There are no quizzes on this show other than asking what your favorite animal is. I was not about to be like, quick, you're not a real fan unless you can name all the dwarves.
Well, thank you. I'm glad for that.
But so I'm interested in thinking about, I guess, I'm trying to think, where was I here? So the other thing that kind of was odd about this book is how it's paced. And this is where I want to bring in the ending. So everybody, you know, if you haven't read this book, just consider this your warning, spoilers here for the ending. The ending just kind of came out of nowhere for me completely. Like you're told that there's going to be this battle of five armies. I don't even know if I fully grasped how that really even started. Like, obviously we knew the goblins were chasing them because they killed the Goblin King. But then like all these other creatures started showing up and we're given, you know, ideas of their alliances and things like that. But then it's like the lake people kill Smaug, who like felt very anticlimactic to me because you're led up to thinking the dwarves are going to do it and then they don't.
And it was literally one sentence. Like I was listening and it was like, Smaug fell down, and then it went to another scene. I was like, wait, that's it? And I, like, didn't remember that it was so short, and it did, yeah, I'm remembering, like, I did not remember the pacing being this almost, like, uneven, because we have, like, maybe, like, 65, 70% of the book, like, they're just, like, traveling to the Lonely Mountain. Like, that entire time, they're, like, just walking, and they have their little, like you were saying, like their little episodic, like getting captured by multiple different people and then like escaping, and we have the whole Gollum section. But then Smaug is like the big, is supposed to be like the big climax, and I found it so funny that they like didn't really have a plan. They were like, yeah, we're gonna get there and we're gonna get the treasure, and then they see Smaug and they're like, oh well, how do we kill him?
Yeah.
And it's like, didn't you have months and months to think about this? Or did you all think that you were just going to die on the way, or like as soon as you got there and you like didn't think that you would need to figure it out?
Yeah, the thing I think about, and I'm a weirdo, but like there's an episode of SpongeBob where Plankton's about to succeed and then they were like, what now? And he's like, I don't know, I never thought I'd get this far. And that's exactly how this felt. It's like they didn't think they'd get this far, even though that was, they kept saying, you know, never say die. And then they get there, they have no plans to kill this dragon. The thing I found was funny is they had no plans as to how they were going to take the treasure, because they have one burglar for like, and Bilbo even brings this up, he's like, you brought one burglar for like thousands of pounds of treasure, like what is this?
Yeah, it's like, how, like, where are you going to bring it? Are you just going to hang out there? Like, it was just, like, so funny that they were so busy, like, having this adventure that it's kind of like they fumbled at the end. Like, they had no idea what they were going to do at the end. And, I mean, you're right. Like, the whole battle could have been, like, something so epic. And, like, that could have been the climax. But it felt so short at the end that it didn't really feel like it got its due.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not really sure, like, if I would have enjoyed it if it was just longer. Like, I just feel like there was a way to kind of maneuver those events. Like, maybe the Smaug killing was in the middle, and then we, like, kind of come down from that climax, and then we have, like, this buildup of all the tension of all, like, the different groups coming in saying, oh, well, we want some of this treasure, we want some of that. But it was kind of all pushed to the end. And I think that's why it just all like got wrapped up so quickly. Like, we didn't have like this epic Thorin death on the battlefield.
Yeah.
And that's something I think that would be so typical in Lord of the Rings. Like, they would have like this really drawn out battle. And maybe that's because like the Hobbit is not supposed to be the Lord of the Rings. Right. It's supposed to be something that's a little bit lighter, like not as heavy. But then like not seeing Thorin die was just like, or I guess not seeing Feely and Keely die, who like protecting him or like having this whole like epic battle scene was like a little bit weird. Like Bilbo gets knocked out and then wakes up and then is like, oh, what happened?
Which happens multiple times in this book. It's just like Bilbo doesn't have to witness anything. He's frequently like just concussed and then comes back. It's like, what happened?
Yeah, and then I'm thinking, like, that is kind of an example of something that makes this more of, like, a book geared towards children, you know? Like, you don't want to get into, like, the gory details of, like, someone being killed. It's much easier for, like, Bilbo to find out later, like, oh, Feely and Keely died protecting Thorin.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, something that's, when I think about it in the context of, like, an oral story that I would like say to like a child maybe, or like as a story, like a children's story that like you can enjoy at any age, you know, like it makes a little bit more sense. And of course it's like all wrapped up in the end when Bilbo is home, but definitely the pacing is a bit weird at the end. And I almost enjoy like the first 60% more than the ending.
Yeah, I'm tempted to agree with that. I thought that I just really was enjoying their little episodic quests. And then once they got to the mountain I liked the scenes between Bilbo and Smaug. I thought that was going to lead to some kind of ultimate showdown. And then that didn't really go anywhere. And then, yeah, I agree with you. Like, you almost enjoy the journey rather than the destination of this book, which was maybe the part of the point of it, or maybe Tolkien just kind of ran out of pages. Like, that could have happened. He's not here. We can't ask him.
Yeah.
But maybe that's also why they decided to stretch this book into 3 movies.
Yeah, I remember going to see that first movie and being so disappointed, thinking, like, we barely got like any action. So I think that they could have definitely it didn't need to be 3 movies, first of all. I mean, I'm always going to be happy. I'm like the type of Tolkien stan. I don't know what we call ourselves, like Tolkien heads, that will enjoy anything. Like, there's a Lord of the Rings series coming out. Even if it's bad, I'm going to watch it. I don't think it's going to be bad. But like, I was just happy to have like any new content because it had been so long. But yeah, the pacing of like the first, it's kind of the opposite. Like, the parts I enjoyed in the book, I did not like in the movie because the pacing felt so off. And then the end, which I disliked in the book because it kind of didn't have those like dramatic moments that I wanted, I kind of got that in the movie. But honestly, I keep them like very separate in my mind. Like, I don't even like to think of them as the same thing. They're just kind of like 2 separate entities because like they're so, I feel like those movies specifically are like so divisive.
Right. And I really just feel like, you know, Harry Potter started this trend with the 7th book being split into 2 movies. And then you saw Twilight did it. And then like all of these things, I think the Hunger Games did it with their last book. I want to say Mockingjay was 2 movies. And then, and then this was 3, and I was like, this book is barely 300 pages. Like, it just barely cracks that. And I'm just thinking, on the flip side, you have Lord of the Rings, which is huge, and each, like, there's 3 movies just for all of Lord of the Rings. It just felt so backwards to me.
Yeah, it didn't make sense. I mean, it felt like kind of a money grab, if anything. And I personally, like, the movies are fun. I wouldn't say I liked them particularly. I was happy to be back in that world. So I was kind of like grateful to be back in that world and seeing something new. But I don't feel like they should have been made, or at least a trilogy should not have been made. I feel like they could have very easily done all of this in like 1 2-hour and 10-minute movie.
Right. Absolutely. I completely agree. I feel like you could highlight you could gloss over some of the slower parts of the book. You could beef up the ending a little bit. You could even give some personalities to some of the dwarves. We get a little bit of, I think Balin's got a bit of a personality, Thorin, like a few of them have something. You could flesh that out a little bit. You could make it 1 movie. Like, that's all you need.
Yeah. And I think they were trying to do too much by like adding, oh, now I'm forgetting if it's I'm pretty sure it's Keeley's love interest, the elf woman, at the very, you know, in the like latter parts of the book. And I'm like, I'm glad they had like a female character. The bar is so low. We don't even need to talk about the Bechdel test because there are no female characters in the book. So it's like impossible to even test it.
Right.
But it's just like, that's not the kind of thing that I would have wanted added, you know. Like, I appreciated that the deaths of like important characters were kind of given their moments, but that was kind of the only thing that I thought they adapted from the books that I like really appreciated.
Yeah, it's like flesh out the characters you have rather than adding in new people.
Yeah, exactly.
And so this is where I want to kind of bring in some other recommendations. You know, chances are a lot of you listening may have read The Hobbit already. Maybe this is a universe you're familiar with. Maybe you're like Marilla and you're a diehard fan. Maybe you're like me and you're like somebody made you watch the movie once and you got sleep. But either way, I think there are recommendations depending on what side you fall into. And Marilla, I'd like to start with you. It doesn't have to be directly related to The Hobbit, but is there another book that you think capture similar themes or just similar things for you that you'd recommend?
Well, this is probably an obvious one, but I would highly recommend, if you've only read The Hobbit and not read the Lord of the Rings trilogy, that you give it a shot. It's definitely more heavy, you know, more fleshed out, but it's the same kind of adventure, and you get way more of the world building. You get a bit more into the characters, especially if you like characters like Gandalf. You get a lot more of him, and you have the introduction of a lot of great characters, like some of my favorite characters, like in the universe, like in the Lord of the Rings universe. And there are fewer of them. Like, there's like a tighter fellowship, so you get more in depth on each of their characters and their motivations, and it's spread over three books. Mm-hmm. So I definitely recommend those. In terms of fantasy, it's kind of funny because I think of myself as someone who loves fantasy books, but I like just like Lord of the Rings fantasy. So I'll continue like watching those movies and like reading those books. And for another fantasy book to kind of grab me, it has to be like excellent. So I'm looking forward to hearing if you have any like fantasy related books that are not just rereading the Lord of the Rings trilogy over and over again.
Yeah, so I kind of went two directions with my recommendations here. One is definitely on the fantasy side. And so, like we mentioned, we've talked about the lack of female characters in this book, like, really stood out to me. So I was like, I want to go like totally in the other direction and give us like a female-centered fantasy. And the book I'd recommend is The Priory of the Orange Tree by Samantha Shannon, which we've talked about how short The Hobbit is. This one is a chunky 850 pages. Like, it is a book. And it was actually probably the first epic fantasy book I ever read. We talked about it on, I believe, season one of this podcast. We have an episode on it. But what The Priory of the Orange Tree does so well, it builds this immense, amazing world, which is probably the best part of The Hobbit, is the world that's created. It builds this world, but it also gives us enough space to really explore characters, character relationships, you know, these like long-held grudges between dynasties and all that lovely stuff. And it's also like beautifully written, but very accessible, even if you're a new fantasy reader like myself. It's long. The length is probably the thing that's going to throw people off the most, but I highly recommend this book. I've read a lot of, you know, fantasy writers saying, you know, people don't like all fantasy books being compared to Tolkien. Not everything is Tolkien-esque. But I would say that this book captures some of that world building, but also it feels wonderfully updated for a new generation.
Very cool. I'll definitely add that to my list.
Yeah, it's a big one. I devote as much time as you need for it and maybe find an e-version because my copy got very heavy to carry around.
I'm currently making my way extremely slowly through Outlander. I don't know if you've read it, but that's also like a chunky, it's like 800 pages, and it's like, I think the audiobook is maybe like 30 hours. And that's kind of a similar, like, if you're looking for a strong female lead in a like historical fantasy romance kind of setting, like Claire Randall is amazing. Mm-hmm. She's an amazing heroine. So if you're looking for something like that, definitely. Have you read it? Or
I have not. I've heard Rachel kind of tell me, she's like, I'm on book five. It's 1,200 pages. And I'm like, girl, what? Like,
she is a trooper. I'm like still on the first one. I've seen all of the current like TV seasons of it. But yeah, you just have to be dedicated to reading, which I'm like trying to get back into. I just have to get into a habit. I feel like that's very, it's it's very Aries of me to like pick something up and want to do it very intensely for 2 months and then completely drop it for a year and then come back to it, you know, in a couple of months.
It's one of the reasons for this show. I have people who request series books all the time and I always have to say no, partially because I don't have the bandwidth to read whole series of books. I had someone recommend, I think, the Wheel of Time series, and I was like, I would need like a year. Like,
yeah, at first I thought, my initial thought was to request Lord of the Rings, like just the first one. But then I thought, oh, I can't just do the first one. I want to talk about all of them. And I definitely can't ask her to read like 1,200 pages, especially with like, that. Yeah, like the latter half of Return of the King is just like, it happens like after the end of the movie. It's just like extra, extra, extra information that I honestly kind of skimmed. Mm. Hope nobody like comes at me for that. But no, yeah. At some point you'll get to them, maybe.
I think so. I've got like a scratch off book poster and the Lord of the Rings trilogy is on there. So eventually if I want to finish the poster, I've got to get to it. And that's my Aries energy coming out. I'm competitive to a fault and I have to finish the
challenge. Oh, yeah. Yep, I feel that.
And the second book I wanted to recommend sort of totally in the other direction, and this is more in keeping with the narrative style of The Hobbit. So the idea of a story being told to you and having this kind of whimsical humor is the Winnie the Pooh books. Like, hear me out, everybody. You're like, what? The Winnie the Pooh books are probably like my favorite series of books for children. Like, I've already planned that like if I have a child someday, I'm getting them like a box set. Like, these are just beautifully, wonderfully told children's books that are, you know, accessible to people of all ages, which I feel like that's what The Hobbit is really going for. It's meant to be for the family rather than one specific audience. And there's like that delightful, like British-y humor. They're kind of similarly, you know, Tolkien and A.A. Milne aren't exactly that far apart in terms of when they were living. So it's like you get a lot of that similar language, that similar humor, obviously much younger and much smaller scale for Winnie the Pooh. But I think if you enjoy kind of the style of The Hobbit and maybe a little less of the fantasy, that might be a good place to revisit. It's even more fun as an adult.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I love Winnie the Pooh. I could do a whole episode just unpacking Winnie the Pooh, but maybe another time. but Marilla, thank you so much for joining me today. I really liked getting to come back to this book. I really like it when people suggest books that I had written off when I was younger. So we did 1984 and now I'm not back on this one. And I'm like, okay, I need to really revisit those books I didn't like when I was a kid. So it was definitely eye-opening for me. And if everyone's looking to find you, where can we find you in the internet or world?
Oh, yeah. I pretty much live my entire life on Instagram. So you can find me at Marilla with 3 A's at the end if you are interested in my musings about just random things.
I also live my life on Instagram, so I relate to that heavily. And as always, you guys can follow new episodes of Your Favorite Book every Thursday. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at YFB Podcast. Marilla, thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. It was so fun to chat with you and also reread like one of my old favorites.